Hello, and welcome to the Well Collab Feminine Leadership Podcast. I am Tammy Zadunik, founder of the Well Collab, and your host for today. Our podcast features feminine leadership principles and women leading both in their professional and personal lives. Let's get started.
I'm Taylor Chetty. I'm a social worker here on Treaty 6 territory in Saskatoon, and I am the founder of Returning Home Counseling and Contracting. And my social media would just be taylor.talking on Instagram.
I love your social.
Aw, thank you. So I have been a social worker for, well, registered for, I think, 2 years now, but I've been in the social work field for almost 10 years this year.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What have you, because you're so young.
I know.
That's what's crazy about it.
Yeah.
So how does that work? So you're registered for 2 years, but what take me back just for people interested in your history and kind of where did you work?
Yeah.
To know.
So my very first job was at Brief and Social Detox working in addictions. And I loved that job a lot. But at the time, like harm reduction was sort of just becoming something that people were talking about. And if I could go back and talk to little baby social work Taylor, I would say like, don't quit. But I also don't know that I regret quitting because I always thought that it was my job to make sure that people stayed sober. But that's not my job. That's not my journey. That has to be their journey. I'm just, you know, somebody that can help them on their journey or hold their hand through some of it. So one night on a night shift, I think I was just kind of looking at SAS jobs. I was casual at the health authority and I was having a really hard time having enough seniority to move around or try anything else. So I applied for a job with the provincial government working out of the prosecutor's office with victim witness services. And it's funny because I remember in undergrad when I was doing my degree, there was a girl in my class that said, victim services is my dream job. And I was like, that sounds horrible. And then I ended up applying for this job with the prosecutor's office. And so the job, I ended up getting it. And I worked out of the prosecutor's office here in Saskatoon and I covered Yorkton and Saskatoon court circuits. Mm-hmm. And so anybody that had to testify in a trial or a preliminary hearing that was under the age of 18 or that was a victim of sexual assault, I got a referral from the Crown's office for them and I had to go and prep them for court and then go to court with them if they needed supports like testimonial aids, things like testifying outside of the courtroom or having a support person sit with them or having a screen up so that they couldn't see the accused person they were testifying against. So it was a lot of travel because I covered such huge service areas and it was burning me out pretty quickly, but I loved the work. Like I became passionate about the work because I always wanted to be a lawyer. And so, yeah. And so I got a lot of exposure to the judicial system this way. But the travel was really exhausting and the work environment wasn't the greatest for me personally. So I started building a lot of relationships with police victim services because they have their own victim services that they kind of engage with. People get support right from the investigation or right from reporting all the way through or until court time and then victim witness takes over, just depending on what people need. So I'd built all of these really good relationships and I kind of thought to myself, like, I like the work that they're doing. I want to be involved from day one. I don't want to just come in and say like, oh, you're going to court now. Hi, I'm here, when you've had a victim services person for years. Like sometimes it takes years to get to trial. So I kind of just put it out to the universe and I was like, I would love to work for the police one day. Like I want to see the whole process through. And so shortly thereafter, the federal government kicked in funding for a designated position for the child abuse unit in Saskatoon. So a victim services person to guide parents and kids through the police process, get them referred to appropriate counseling services, and then walk with them as long as they needed me to through to the end of court or just until they didn't need me anymore. So I worked at the prosecutor's office for a year, and then I ended up with Saskatoon Police Service with the child abuse unit at the child center for, I think, 5.5 years. Yeah. And
how do they determine, and this is not on the topic for today, but how do they determine when they're no longer needing you? Do they determine that or does the system determine that?
I think the system sort of tries to determine when the handoff happens, but I was very honest and transparent with clients right from the start that when this goes to court, I can stay involved with you if we don't lose. Sometimes you lose contact because so much stuff happens in between and the process is so long and there's a lot of waiting. So sometimes I would naturally lose contact with clients and then they would end up picking up with victim witness. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then sometimes clients would say, no, I want you like through to the end. And I had really like strong, consistent relationships with my clients. Or sometimes they would just say, you know what, Taylor, I don't think I need any support. Like when victim witness pops in, then if I feel like I want you there, then I'll reach out. And so I was just very honest in saying to people, like, you get to decide how much I walk with you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did that limit the amount of people you could? Because isn't it like within the system, there's a certain amount of people assigned to you? Or could you say, oh, I've kind of reached capacity with how many people I'm working with?
Mm-hmm. So we kind of rigged it up in the system that my supervisor would refer anybody under the age of 17 to me that came through the police system. And then when I did start to reach capacity, I would tell her and I would then lower kind of severity files, like maybe they witnessed a robbery, or not to say that's not traumatic, but I was primarily working with more abuse stuff. So when it got to the point where I was like, okay, I have like 200 files open right now, I need to cut back a bit. Then I was really lucky and I was supported, and Victim Services has a really healthy group of volunteers that they come in and they pick up on some of the files where people might just need a couple phone calls to reassure them that it's normal to feel scared about what happened, and it's, you know, or give them court updates. Yeah. So I always tell everybody, if you're interested in kind of getting to know the judicial system, or if you're interested in policing or social work, like volunteer victim services, you'll see everything there.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That opportunity is there.
Totally. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So then, okay, fine. So then,
yeah,
there, this is Taylor. And then how do we get from that point to your, like, Taylor talking, where I first became like infatuated with you, with your openness to talk about sex?
Yeah.
Like, how did that happen? Or why?
So, yeah. So somewhere in my time at SPS, I applied for grad school and I started doing a thesis. And I was doing thesis research anyways. And I decided that I wanted to research child sexual abuse. Okay. Because it was what I was working in the most and what I was dealing with. And what I was noticing was that parents weren't talking to their kids about sex, and it was resulting in abuse, and the research supported what I was seeing.
Okay, so let's just stop there for a second. So parents don't want to talk to their kids about sex because they have, my assumption would be, their own discomfort with the topic or shame around it.
Sometimes, yeah. And sometimes just because they didn't realize they needed to.
Like money. Like, a lot of people don't talk about money in their home.
Totally.
Or saving or tax or
all these
conversations.
Money, death, and sex. People don't want to talk about those things.
Those are like my favorite topics.
Me too. I love talking about those things.
That's why we're here today. That's interesting, because my mom always talked about sex really openly with me. And she would talk about even like her and my dad's relationship, and made it, just really made sex really normal for me, mm-hmm. periods really normal for me, like menstruation, bleeding. And I grew up just knowing that my parents were like very much in love and physical with one another. And I mean, they're like 80 and 77 now, and they still talk about it. Mom still talks about it with me. And I tease her all the time on the phone. I'm like, oh, you didn't get to the phone very quick. Were you and dad like in the bedroom? Like, I'm always teasing her. Oh. And I said today, oh, I have a friend coming for a podcast. We're going to talk about sex, Mom. It's my favorite topic. She's like so excited.
I love it. Yeah, my mom was very open talking about sex as well. When I lost my virginity, which virginity is a whole construct on its own. Yes. We can talk about that later too. But when I had sex for the first time, my mom was the first person that knew. And she knew, like, I told her previous, like I said, I'm serious. I really love this person and they love me too. And we've talked about having sex and I know it's going to happen. And she's like, Kate, we need to get you on birth control. I would feel more comfortable with that. And as soon as it happened, I texted her and I said, yeah, I had sex, you know? And so I think I was very privileged, and I'm very, very grateful that my mom had those kinds of conversations with me, because, you know, I know that kids that don't have those kinds of open conversations, they're learning from each other, they're learning from pornography, mm-hmm. they're learning from, you know, conversations or relationships that might not be healthy sources or accurate sources of information.
I feel like there's so many roads that we could go down right now, because I'm thinking of if I think about the conversations I've had with women over the past 6 years at The Well, and just hearing them talk about, sex comes up. I like to talk about it, so I bring it up. But so many women have had such terrible experiences mm-hmm. with sex. And I'm not talking about assault or abuse, just shame and not understanding pleasure, and that it's okay to it's okay to feel pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really comes down to that a lot of times. There's so much shame around pleasure and feeling good. Mm-hmm. And they don't know how to orgasm themselves. Mm-hmm. So then, and again, it's not one thing I love about you, Taylor, is you, no one is ever shamed when they're around you.
No. Oh, gosh. That's a nice compliment. Thank you.
There's never any shame. Like, it's never, even when I talk about, women haven't been able to orgasm, that's not a shame thing. That's like, I mean, to me, it's like the patriarch. Like, I mean, that's like where it comes down to for me, is that power over one another.
Yeah.
And people not being in touch with them, with themselves, not of their own fault or mistake. So I just want to clear that this is nothing today is shameful that we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all very normal. But
mm-hmm. yeah, well, male orgasm has been prioritized for so long,
Tell me more about that.
Well, there's a huge orgasm gap where women are... They are taught that, in even in subtle ways, not necessarily that anyone's walking up to them and saying, like, your pleasure is shameful, but because even just our anatomy, men don't have an organ that is like an internal organ, like an organ that is outside of them that, excretes substances and that naturally lubricates itself and that knows how to protect itself from infections with its own hair. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many... There's so many differences in our anatomy, and it's just so beautiful. But for some reason, and I think too, if we go back like civilizations historically, and especially in indigenous cultures, women have been the power of, they've been the leaders. And so, when we think about how this all ties into kind of colonization and religion and things like that, what's the easiest way to break down a society is by making the women small. Or getting rid of them, or reducing them. And so I think also pornography has been mostly produced by and for men mm-hmm. for a long time. And I think that so if women don't have representation of what a real orgasm looks like and what a body like theirs looks like when it experiences pleasure or orgasm, or what an unmutilated vulva or vagina looks like, if they're not seeing the representation, they may never think that their experience that they desire could be real or could come true.
I'm sad for and I don't mean this in a way of even shaming people who watch porn. I know that it's but I'm sad for porn in the sense that the porn I saw growing up was it was actually funny because it was really hard to access. It was on the TV through satellite, and you could only get it if I was babysitting at someone's house where those parents happened to have a satellite. Mm-hmm. And then we would laugh and sneak the channel and then mm-hmm. quickly turn it off. Or maybe sometimes on the French, on the CBC channel, you could see some nudity and sex.
Yeah.
But that was the extent of my porn, or else maybe there was a magazine, but those were geared towards guys. Those were not geared towards...
No,
I also don't think I personally don't need a nudie man magazine. That's not a turn on for me.
Yeah.
I think how we get turned on to is so different.
So different. Yeah. And I think because women are so inside of every woman, there men too. But I would argue more so for women. There's a whole universe the way that our bodies are connected within their own systems is and we're covered in erogenous zones that when you touch a woman in a specific spot, they come alive, and that could be their arm.
Do you think that's different for men? Is that different for men, do you think?
I mean, men do have less erogenous zones.
Do they? Is it because I always wondered if they were just weren't sensitive to it
mm-hmm.
and we're just so maybe more in touch with our bodies.
That's the feminine energy though too, right? And it's not gendered. Everybody has feminine and masculine energy, and the masculine is what most of us live in, especially women, especially moms, especially women that feel like they carry all of this responsibility. and they have to do everything all the time. And then plus they have to work, and then they have to look good, and they have to have babies, and they have to
do more. Do more.
Yeah.
Ladies.
Yeah.
There's one message from today. It's do more. Just kidding.
It's do less. Oh gosh. Do less. But yeah. And then, so that's the masculine, and that's where a lot of women, that's the energy that they live in. And so then they neglect the feminine, and men neglect their feminine energy too, right? Like the compassion, the flow, the nurturance, the creativity, the connection. And so I think it really is unfortunate that, you know, like you said, the patriarchal consequences become our present day responsibility.
Yeah. And the patriarchal consequences are they're, it's very negative towards men. And I think that's the part that it's not, patriarch is not man. For my understanding, it's power over. And women can be patriarchal in the way they parent their kids with violence and anger. Like sometimes, I mean, I have definitely been someone who has been patriarchal to my kids when they were little, trying to control them and with power over, rather than having that ability to listen and slow down. And a lot of that is because I have to do so many things, and it's just the world and the culture we live in. And really, I feel like the hill I'll die on is the hill of changing that, of stopping that, of stopping women feeling like they have to do everything. That's my hill is like understanding feminine energy and masculine energy and the intersection, and how we actually implement that into business and life and everything.
Yeah, I think that there's room. There's obviously room for both. And I don't know if balance is ever truly attainable, especially because of the way that our society lives. But I think that the patriarchy hurts men too, because men are also deprived of the opportunity to slow down and connect with their own pleasure as well, especially if they are consumers of pornography. And you know me, I don't shame against porn. And if anything, I preach, like, if you feel like you need representation, consume porn that's produced by and for women. You know, there are tons of producers nowadays that are women, like Erica Lust or Jackie St. James, like, who prioritize pleasure and connection over just like what they would call gonzo porn,
like penetration,
which is just penetration focused on the orgasm. Like, what about just enjoying people as they are and connecting with them? And if you orgasm, that's great, but I think that's another pressure put on women, is that, you know, you have to orgasm. And if women have never had one before, they put so much pressure on themselves. And I think it's just about slowing down. And a lot of people can't slow down. They're not connected to their own nervous systems. They're not connected to their own breath. They're not connected to their bodies. And so also having a safe partner that allows you the space and the air to do that
can
sometimes be really hard to find, because everyone's so quick to just, like, they want to have sex right now.
Just, like, take a moment. I know. Yeah. It's like, what's the end game? I completely agree with you. I think for the first 20 years of my life, it was focused on the orgasm. And only now in my 40s, I'm just like, oh, I heard Esther Perel say.
Oh, I love her.
I know. I love when she talks about the erotic.
Oh,
and how it's not.
I love talking about Eros and, like, life force energy. Yes.
Like, we have it right now. It's happening.
100% we do.
Yeah. And I see that, like, my husband will go to his music, his band, or my son will go sing. And there's this, like, erotic. Yeah. The Eros. I mean, how you say it. Like,
that's the feminine.
Oh.
Passion.
So she said, Esther Perel says, just think of it like a party. You're just going to an event. So every time now I enter into sex, we're going to have sex, like, we know, because here's the thing is, when you have three teenagers, you're planning it. This is not happening without a plan.
It's still good if it's planned.
It's fine if it's planned. But I think when we were younger, it was like, oh, well, that's not, it did, like in TV and movie, it's like, it just happens, right?
I was going to ask.
So,
yeah.
Like, in the moment. So you think in your head that it needs to be that way, but now everything is very planned. And actually, I think the planning is so fun, but now I just think of it as like a party. Like, I'm going to a party. I don't know what's going to happen at the party. I have no expectations at the party. And let's just go to the party. Let's just show up. Like, and I'm having my hands up right now, like in surrender. And I'm like, let's just see what happens. Just see what happens.
I love that.
Yeah, that's helped me a lot.
I think questioning, where did you learn that? I love that question.
Yeah. Where did you learn that it was like, had, like, there was this goal-orientated sex?
Oh, from a movie?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
who directs the 99% of movies up till now, like in the past? Men.
White men. Cis white men.
Yes. Yep. It's all been directed. We have been taught this. This is not... Mm-hmm. This is not who we actually are. We've been taught it.
Yeah. And it's not even about like, no more cis white men. It's not about that. It's about, okay, we now know that that is a perspective from that piece of the puzzle. Now let's get some people of color. Let's get some women. Let's get people that have had all of these different lived experiences.
Yeah, let's see some different perspectives. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. That's fun. That makes life interesting.
Yes.
I love very deeply three cis white men. They're very important people to me. My two boys and my husband. I love them, and my daughter, of course, but I love them so much. Like, I don't want them to feel like I don't love them because of the work I do. Mm-hmm. But honestly, sometimes I think that it comes up. Like, I think that they feel, you know, and I have to remind them that's not what feminism is about.
No.
No, it's ending sexual exploitation for all people, for you too. You don't have to be this like masculine, you know, like they feel pressure for that. They feel pressure for that for sure still.
Yes. I've even heard from men that they feel pressure to be attracted to a certain kind of body type in women.
They do.
Because of media.
Yeah.
I think media is a huge piece of the conversation, because if we learn from media that is not coming from a place of passion and trauma-informed care and eroticism and love and connection, what are we going to be consuming? And why would we ever expect that following that blueprint would ever give us something that we actually enjoy and want? Because that's not the intention of that media being created.
What is the intention of it? Like, what, to make money? Like, is that just the quick... I think the funny thing about that to me, though, is that if you're creating content for like cis white men, they're not the largest consumers. We are. Mm-hmm. Women are the largest consumers in the home. Mm-hmm. And we're the ones making most of the decisions as to what we're consuming on TV, what we're consuming at the store, at the grocery store, like everywhere, clothing. Mm-hmm. So why is none of it geared towards us? It's getting better, but I feel like it's only really been getting better since like maybe 2016, 2017, maybe even more recently than that.
Yeah. Well, and media is a huge contributor to why sexual violence victims and survivors feel confused about their own experience with sexual violence, because they're used to seeing in the media that assault is perpetrated by strangers in dark alleys, or, you know, that it's something that happens a certain way. Whereas, like, we know that most sexual violence is perpetrated by people that are close to survivors, and survivors are not usually just helpless looking people. Like, it's so media and being mindful of media consumption is huge, and the type of porn you're consuming and things like that. Like, media plays a huge role in our lives. And I even noticed for me, sometimes when I watch, I really, this is something that I noticed last year that I discovered about myself. I love Love is Blind, and I love watching like dating shows.
Yes, I know. I do. My daughter and I actually watch Love is Blind. I like Piper. I don't know. This is like, I don't know. I think you have to maybe quit.
But, you know, like, as something that I really realized was that I feel more single when I watch those shows. It makes me, I subconsciously get, as a single woman, I sometimes get kind of like, oh, you know, and then it makes me think like, I need to go out and find someone.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that I noticed and I never had awareness of before. And once I notice that, I'm a lot more kind of, I check in with myself a lot more now when I watch those shows to make sure that I'm not getting wrapped up in it and thinking that I'm supposed to be doing that too.
There's something wrong with your life.
Yeah.
Or being, you have to be partnered, because that's another thing that we're, I guess, another construct. I mean, I think there's a natural inclination to be in community or with people. What would you say about that? Like, being partnered versus not being partnered?
I think that, well... I mean, we're hardwired for connection. We all know that. Like, our nervous systems are... When I talk about the nervous system in counseling and when I teach kids about it, I talk about it like it's a Bluetooth system. Our limbic system is what connects us to each other. It's like this unseen kind of thing that we're constantly scanning our environment for threat or for safety. And when we find safety in another person, we kind of pair to them like a Bluetooth connector. Mm. And that's why grief is so painful too, because when that connection gets cut, when we break up or when someone dies or they move away, then that limbic system is left hanging out with nobody to connect with. And it's painful because it's an unseen trauma. But we're better together, but I don't think that we have to prioritize romantic relationships the way that we do. I think that, like, there is nobody that I am more in love with than my friends. I look at my friends and I'm like, oh my God, I could just devour them. Like, they're the most beautiful people. Their hearts are so big. They make me feel so safe and heard and secure and validated and reassured that, like, you know, I think that romantic love can provide that, but romantic love also provides a lot of obstacles for people because they become mirrors for our childhood wounds. And so I think that romantic partnership is really hard for people that aren't willing to sit uncomfortably with themselves and look at, you know, why do I react this way when my partner does this? Why do I continue to have these same fights over it, pick these same fights over and over again? Or why do I shut down like this? Or why do I lash out? And people that aren't willing or ready or have the awareness or the resources to explore that within themselves, they really do struggle in romantic partnerships. And that's when you need, you know, it takes a village for your whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely does. It definitely takes a village.
So how do you think sex plays into that then?
So,
like, does sex make, so with breakups, with
relationships, romantic love, how does sex play in as a positive or a negative? I'm trying to, like, I want to get into this talking a little bit about the different generations and how we view sex. And it feels different now. It feels like it's more, I'm not going to say casual, it just, because I think that's a word that my generation would use, because I don't think it's casual. I think it's intentional. Mm-hmm. Is it a deeper connection when sex is involved in a romantic relationship?
Mm-hmm. I know people would agree and disagree with me.
Yeah, I want to know what you think. I mean,
personally,
yeah, sure.
I think it's way deeper. I think that when we have sex, it catalyzes this entire hormonal response, especially for women, more so for women, because our whole body is hardwired for nurturance. You know, whether it's towards children or it's towards other people or towards our community or humanity, like, women are givers. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's hard for a lot of women to receive. And so especially if a man has given you an orgasm, to receive that and to connect during that, like, that is a huge thing. Like, for women, oxytocin skyrockets. And that's your bonding hormone.
Yeah. I mean, it's so vulnerable.
So vulnerable. And also, when you have an orgasm, your entire brain goes offline.
I love it.
You're completely in your body. And so, you know, you said surrender earlier, you mentioned that word, and surrender is a huge part of orgasm. And so when women do that with a partner, they're the most vulnerable they have ever been. And so, I mean, that, to me, that is equally as vulnerable as, like, bearing your entire heart. And so I think that it's unreasonable of women to expect themselves to have sex with no strings attached when they're basically experiencing chemical warfare in their body.
I know. That's what it feels like to me. Like, it's hard for me to understand how, and I don't know if anyone's actually experiencing, and maybe it's just media telling me that is what it can be. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've never had a person tell me that. I've only heard that through media, but I've never had someone tell me that as their own experience, that they're able to have sex, mm-hmm. like, have an orgasm and then not feel connected to that mm-hmm. person.
And that's why it is important to save that experience for somebody that maybe you trust can hold that experience in a sacred way for you, because it is a pretty sacred experience to experience, like, or to have that level of vulnerability with somebody. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for men, if they haven't established, like, a connection previous to having sex, what happens with their hormones is, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to explain this the most graceful way, but essentially what happens is they will experience less oxytocin. And so that's why a lot of men, they experience this big buildup, like, I want to have sex with her. I like her so much. I have this connection to her. And then after having sex, will feel less connected. And a lot of men,
what?
Yeah. Yeah, it has to do with vasopressin is the hormone that does this to them. So it's for women, they experience higher connection and men might experience a decrease in connection. And so that's why, again, it's even more vulnerable for women to be giving their sexual energy to a situation. And, you know, that's not to say there are probably a lot of women that the other piece of it is that a lot of women feel empowered when they have sex with men, because especially, you know, if they've had negative sexual experiences and then they're now in this situation where they're like, I'm choosing to have sex with this man. I am going to orgasm. I'm going to do this. You know, I'm showing up to this table when maybe they've never had a consensual experience before that they had control over. So there's also the empowerment piece. And so if that's what you're after, then that's great. And so it comes down to intention. I think intention is huge. Why am I having sex with this person? And can I trust that this person will give me the experience that I'm desiring? And when we think about aftercare, how is this person going to treat me after I have sex with them?
Yeah, I love all of that. I want to talk about all those things a little bit more. I want to talk about actually the act of sex. This is what it came to mind as you were talking earlier was, do you ever just think about how you act during sex and how you would like never just act that way?
Yes.
Like you would never, there has to be so much hormone involved because you would never just like act that way right now.
Well, because it's like, that's our, sex is how a lot of humans play.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah,
adult,
it's so
play.
Fun. That's how I think of it. I think
sex
it's
should
so
be,
fun.
Sex should be fun and it should be connecting and it should be enjoyable and you should feel good after, you know, whether or not you're partnered with that person. Sex should be an enjoyable experience.
So we know that a lot of people listening to this are not going to feel that way at all.
No.
What would you, how do you just in your experience help people or talk to people who do not feel that way at all? Mm-hmm. It is not fun. It is not a happy experience, but they feel that they have to do it. Mm-hmm. Or they're with a partner that they don't foresee it ever being playful and fun.
Mm. I would start by asking them to reflect on times where sex was really good or when they felt pleasure in their body. What was the context? Because context is huge for people when they have sex. Like a lot of people, like, they can't have sex until like their house is clean. So if the context is that I need my house to be clean, otherwise all I'm going to be thinking about is how there's dirty dishes in the sink and I'm supposed to sit here and have an orgasm and submit to this experience. Like, so if the context is that, you know, pleasure comes after your house is clean or when you have a clean house, then maybe it's sharing that with your spouse, or maybe it's even if you have the access and the means, hire a house cleaner. Like,
I that's the best advice. I think ask for what you need.
Yes.
First, you have to try to figure out what you need, because a lot of people don't know what they need. But what if you can get in touch with yourself and figure out what you need?
Yeah.
Then asking for what, or finding a way. I mean, I really believe in prioritizing sex, because for me, that's prioritizing relationship, which is my number one value.
Yeah. I think, too, breath is huge. Your breath is a direct link to your inner world. And when you are breathing with constriction, which, I mean, if we go back to the porn conversation, what do you see in porn? Like that, right? When you are experiencing something that is expansive and that can take over your whole body, like an orgasm, you would not be breathing like that. You'd be, right?
Which like makes for a better orgasm.
Yes, because you create space for that pleasure to take over your whole body, right?
Totally.
So it's, and that's the whole point of it, is that you want it to be expansive. And so I think, you know, like going back and recognizing your context, and then also noticing, what are my breath patterns? And another piece of like pleasure and like eros or erotic energy is that you can find it anywhere. Like you said, we have it right now because you and I are really connecting over this conversation. Yeah. Like our eye contact is good and we're laughing and we're connecting and our limbic systems are really like happy with each other right now. Yeah. But where do you find pleasure in everyday life? I find pleasure in this latte. I find pleasure in a slow morning. I find pleasure when I get home at the end of the day and I sit on the couch and my cat comes and sits in my lap and purrs and I get to just feel her soft fur and talk to her about my day. You know, like I think finding pleasure outside of the bedroom will make it less intimidating when you experience it in, because you are already then primed for it.
Yeah, that's the quote that I'm going to use on Instagram.
That's so good.
That's like the quote. I'm pulling that. That is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not just, we don't save pleasure for that moment. That's not.
No way.
When I talk about pleasure,
I think, or eroticism, I think right away people think sex,
but that's not what I'm talking about. Pleasure. Yeah, I'm like you. Like, I can find pleasure in everything. And I feel like I even set up my home so that there's bits of pleasure all around me, or dopamine hits even. You know, I have like beautiful art that's locally done, and pictures of my family and my pets and soft blankets and books, and everything for me is different elements of things that bring me pleasure. And I want my family to do the same thing. I want them to bring in their elements, what brings them pleasure, what makes them happy. I think about normalizing that for your family and making it okay. I think religion brought a lot of that not feeling pleasure. Like, my husband is so funny. He thinks if the pews and the chairs are soft in church, it's like bad, because he was raised Catholic and you have to suffer. Mm-hmm. So you should like sit in a chair that's hard and you should suffer. And there's this whole like co-redeemer suffering thing that happens. And I think that plays into this, mm-hmm. because sex is hide it away, put it behind a closed door, don't let anyone know.
It's only for procreation.
And you get pleasure, but it's like mainly for the man, which is hilarious, because did you know, and I'm sure you know, but I mean, did you know that on the, like, human anatomy, a female is the only one with an organ solely for pleasure?
Yes.
Which is the clitoris.
Yes.
It has no other purpose.
Yes.
That's it. You think God's like, don't have an orgasm? The universe, God is like, have multiple orgasms, honey.
Yes.
I made it for that.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that we get to have multiple orgasms.
Yes.
I don't think once a male ejaculates, can he have multiple orgasms too, though? You might know. I don't know.
I think some men can. I also think that there's lots of men that coach men about ejaculation suppression and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not as well versed in that, because a lot of my knowledge is rooted in trauma, the nervous system, and relationships versus the anatomy, and especially the anatomy of men. But I do think that there are men that can have multiple orgasms. Now, also, physical fitness plays into this too, right?
I think pelvic floor, as soon as you said that, I was like, those men who are getting coached by him would have great pelvic floors. Because pelvic floor health is so important for men.
Yes, it is. It's so important for everybody.
Like, for erectile dysfunction.
And especially for the female orgasm.
Yes. Oh, like, I love doing Kegels.
Yes. Yeah. Do your Kegels. Go see your pelvic floor physio. Yeah.
Do them while you're listening to the podcast.
Yes. Okay. Like, you're picking up a blueberry up through your belly button.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't just squeeze in.
I like to walk the ladder from the anus up to the belly button, all the way around.
Excellent work.
It's very hard. I'm focusing now. You shouldn't have to concentrate. So I'm doing it wrong.
I love you.
I'm going to stop.
Let's talk about religion, Tammy.
Yeah, we love Taylor and I kind of like bonded a little bit on that, because I've done a lot of, I don't call it deconstructing, because I don't actually think I was ever constructed. I've always been very fluid. Like, my family, I was raised very, we did go to church. We went to United Church. I had a very open upbringing, but some of my extended family was more fundamentalist. That's the word I was looking for. So I felt a lot of shame in who I was from that family. And I would still say there's still shame that happens on myself and my parents from that side. But I've chosen to remove myself from that and not get involved in that anymore and just be more open myself. But can you tell that I'm struggling right now as I'm talking? Mm-hmm. Because it's still in here. Yeah. And it will be, because it's a part of my upbringing. I used to have a poster of Madonna, this gorgeous poster of Madonna, like in just a few beads. She's like bedazzled kind of from way back in the 90s. And I remember my aunt came over and she said, I can't sleep in this room with that poster there. And my mom was like, leave the poster up. Like, I don't care. It's fine. And it was like, Madonna's basically naked in it, but she's like, looks so stunning and gorgeous. And I feel like even my art and my photography is still really about like the female form, that I just love the female form so much. I think it's so stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And that shame kind of pulled me away from that and made me, you know, it makes you ashamed of your own body, because, well, I don't understand why that's sexualized, because I wasn't sexualizing that poster. Mm-hmm. But for her, it became like as if I was a bad person. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that's my intro. Man, that was like...
Yeah.
Don't therapy me. Just kidding.
Well, you know, my belief about shame is that this is how I conceptualize or visualize shame, is that it's like mold. It grows in the dark, in the places that we don't talk about it, in the places that we hide it from other people because we're too scared that if we show them our shameful parts that we won't be lovable. And so when every time that you share something like that, you crack that open a little bit so that there's a light that can shine in that can maybe eradicate some of that mold that just grows and takes over. And so I think these are really important conversations to have, because everybody should be having good sex and experiencing pleasure with their partners, even if you are getting up and going to church on Sunday morning. Like, I think it should not be something, it's our human right to have pleasure.
What do you feel about the role of religion with sex? Or what do you want to talk about with religion?
So there's a person that I met years ago. I'm not going to share any details. But this person had experienced sexual violence, and their biggest fear was telling their spouse because they didn't want to admit they had sex with someone else. And they were going to church a lot and praying about it and had a lot of really difficult feelings about it. And I really, I didn't want to dismiss their religious beliefs, because I do believe that there is a place for religion in a lot of people's lives. But I could see how it was becoming something that was not helpful in this moment. And I had to explain to them that sexual violence is not sex. It's violence. It's assault. It's about power and control. Like, there's a huge difference between sex and those kinds of things. And I think that the Bible has been taken and kind of contorted and used for people's kind of agendas for a long time. And so it's kind of like, no, the point of sex is to procreate, or the point of sex is to consummate your marriage, or take away this precious part of you, which is your virginity, which virginity doesn't exist. Because if we go at it from an anatomical perspective, your hymen can break at any point in time. You could put a tampon and you could be coming to one of my spin classes and your hymen could break. You wouldn't feel it. It can grow back. So what is virginity? If it's just the first time that you had sex, well, then how could you say to somebody, well, you were sexually assaulted, so you're no longer a virgin? That wasn't sex. You get to decide the first time that you had sex, real sex. And what does sex look like to each person? Sometimes when people have sex, there's no penetration. It's just oral sex. Or it's just rubbing or touching or whatever. Like, maybe that's what they classify as sex. So virginity is a whole construct that has come from religious underpinnings.
Control.
And again, it's another example of how we try to make women small, right? Oh, you're like this precious little flower. And if someone touches you a certain way, then, oh, so you're not, like, pleasure automatically becomes shameful and bad. Because it means that you're somehow damaged if you do it. And it's the same with your Madonna poster, right? Like, why don't we reduce women to set, like, the reductionism that happens for women, right? We reduce women to sexual objects.
I didn't even know that there was anything wrong with that. There isn't anything wrong with the poster. But I didn't even understand why there would be a problem until someone else's judgment and fear came into the picture and made something that I thought was beautiful art into something that was ugly and shameful and negative that I still think about 30 years later. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that we do a lot of harm when we project our own sort of, like, I think, I don't know what the word would be, but project our own maybe fear onto other people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And those belief systems that come with religion, you know, if I do this, then that means this about me. It's so intense. Everything that you do is so shame-based and so rooted in don't mess up. But, like, who gets to determine what messing up is?
Yeah.
Who gets to make those rules? And, you know, if God, whatever God you believe in, created you in his or her or their image, why is it that everything you do is so shame-filled then?
Yeah, it's just not. It doesn't align for me, which I think is what really took me away from the church mm-hmm. in the last few years, mm-hmm. has been just seeing the misalignment of God and the stuff at the, like, taught at the pulpit. And I think I kept going to new churches trying to find God in the people. And what I kind of realized was I already have God within myself.
Yes.
So, and you know what? I'm not there yet where I can go back, but I understand that they're all humans. Mm-hmm. And so I understand that that's also a thing that I'm not there yet and I don't have to go back. But I do just really feel like people need to, like, I need to recognize that God was in myself and he's been guiding me this whole time. And I didn't need to keep seeking approval from the church and from their beliefs, that I actually have it within me. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized that, then your whole world opens up.
Yeah.
And you can just talk about things and not worry about what people think. And you really find God then.
Yes. I'm going to sound like such a, I don't know, I'm very spiritual and I believe that the highest energy frequency leader is love. I think that God is love. And I think that, you know, when I consider conversations about sex, sex is a form of love that people can give to and have with each other. You know, sex can be a very loving experience. And so what is more spiritual than the sacred act of showing somebody else love through experiencing your physical bodies together?
It's so amazing.
It is amazing. And I think it has so much healing capacity for people, you know, whether or not you've experienced violence, like maybe you've just felt powerless a lot in your life. And then you get into a bedroom where somebody is allowing you to take a more dominant position, or you're finally, for the first time in your life, allowing yourself to submit to somebody else and just say, like, yes, to something that is going to, you're going to have a high return on your investment if we want to talk about money, right?
I love that.
And I just think, like, it's just so huge. And I think, like, my God is love. And so whenever I struggle with a decision or when I struggle with another person, I'm like, how could I look at this from a place of love? And how can I show up in love today? Because, I mean, if we look at any of the teachings in the Bible or anywhere, anything that any religion is saying, it's all saying the same thing. It's saying love each other and love yourself. Mm-hmm. But it's just when we get these kind of, like, distorted rules around it where it becomes patriarchal, colonial, oppressive.
Oh, I think that that's great, Taylor. That's exactly where we're going to end it, because you're right. Like, my God is love. Your God is love. Mm-hmm. And what a great God that is. Like, like, that's the best. And
yes.
I think you can always use that lens mm-hmm. to make decisions to how you treat people, everything you said. Mm-hmm. And I just hope, because a few times while we were talking, I was like, oh, I just want to have sex. So what I'm hoping is that people listen to this podcast and they get laid.
Yes.
Have great sex. Mm. Mm.
Mm. Delicious.
Delicious. And if you want to work through things with sex and you don't feel like you're at the point where you see it as, like, a positive thing, then I think you should go talk to Taylor.
Please. I want to talk about it. Yes. And it doesn't even have to be about sex. It can just be about, you know, where do you find pleasure? Where are you passionate? Yeah. And if not, then why not? And how can we shift your narrative?
It's rarely about sex.
No.
If sex is not good, it's rarely about sex.
No.
It's usually about many other things. But this went way too fast for me, so we might have to have a part two. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Tammy.
We hope you all come tonight.